Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday morning MV Pro Call. Today is June 10th, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do by going to motorvitality.com and listening to them there, or by subscribing to whatever podcast application you happen to use. Speaking of calls on motorvitality.com, though, I did want to mention that we have archived all of the calls that are 3 years and older. So they're still available for MV members. All you have to do, though, and the topics are still there, so you can go through and listen to the topics, and we did leave up some of the guest speakers, so those are still there automatically. But the many of the regular calls that we have that are 2018 and older are archived. So if you want to go back and if there's a topic or a call that you want to listen to, then you'll need to reach out to us and we can send you a link or you know, one of the specific episodes or send you a link to all of any particular year or all of them if you want. So we've just taken them off of the main server so that speeds up our website a little bit more. So with that, though, I want to start the call off the way I do every week. I do want to mention I'm driving today, too, so give you a heads up, Jen and Corey, if something happens where I'm gone, then I know that we'll be in good hands with you guys. So, but I want to start the call off the way I do every week, which is by asking, was there anything that happened this last week that or anything you learned this last week that you wish you would had known before, anything that you learned that's worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with, any questions that you have?
Kelly, if nobody else does, I have a couple of things.
Awesome. Go ahead, Jen.
All righty. So I do want to kind of do a quick housekeeping. Kelly mentioned our website. We've been making some changes to it, cleaning it up. We had some pretty major issues with our shipping options. And so Corey and I, you know, huge thank you to Corey because he spent like a full week on it. And then him and I spent, I think, 14 hours one day. And then Kelly and him a few more hours. I think we finally have it figured out. So I appreciate the patience, but if anybody happens to have any issues on the website if they're ordering supplies and then they are having a hard time at checkout, please, please, please give us a call. The number's up at the top. It's all over the website. And let us know, because come to find out, there were a few people that it was telling them there weren't shipping options, and so they just didn't check out. And that's very, very frustrating. So they didn't call us or anything. So please reach out to us if you have any issues with ordering testing supplies. Or we also, on that happy note, just like everybody else in the world right now, we are having a hard time getting some of the supplies in. Precipitation is one of them. We can get it from one supplier, but not the other. Please be patient. When we're sending out advertising, we're trying to send out advertising for items we have in stock. So if you need filters, we have a ton of filters. Please buy filters from us. we also have the treated water thin touch discs, which I know are on back order through Lamont, so if anybody's interested in those. Okay, done with that plug-in. Anybody have any questions on any of that? Didn't think so. So another thing that I wanted to talk about today is, as many of you know, I am part of the Women in the Industry group through the Water Quality Association. Jamie West, she's on the calls today. She spoke a little bit about the mentoring program, and I had promised I would talk about the Women in the Industry sponsorship opportunities. And we opened this up last week. We already have, I think we have 8 sponsors so far. And sponsorship is either $500 or $2,500. And what that does is it provides some of the materials that we are purchasing for the WIN program, and then also bringing in outside speakers. Right now we have over, I think, Jamie, if I'm not mistaken, we have over 30 people that are women that are people, because we do have some men there in the group. We have over 30 in the group right now, and then this will be opened up to all WQA members. They'll be able to attend our meetings also. But we'll bring outside speakers in. And then the biggest thing is it's a scholarship program for women who want to attend the WQA conferences or the mid-year leadership conference. And, you know, sometimes their companies can't afford to send them or their companies just won't. And so instead of them having to have that out of pocket for themselves, this will give them the opportunity to attend the conferences. But the what you get as a supporter is you will get the logo that you can use anywhere. You can use it on your web page. You can use it in advertising. You can use it in your job postings. I mean, I think that's pretty cool. If you were to have that WIN logo, even though, you know, Women in the Industry Supporter, on a job posting, I think that would be really awesome. And then your company gets announced and will also be in the industry publications. Your logo is going to be placed on the web page along with a link to your website. And that's at the $500. And then for the $2,500, you get a whole lot more advertising with your name all over it. So anyways, I just wanted to put that plug out there if anybody's interested. As a matter of fact, Jamie, your company filled out paperwork yesterday, didn't you?
We did, and the website people were so quick, like within less than 2 hours, we were already posted as a sponsor for WIN. So they're on it. If you send your logo and everything, they get it up pretty quick. You're not waiting 3 or 4 months, and then all of a sudden it appears. And then within 10 minutes, I had the Women in Industry logo and all the ways that I can use it from Kathleen.
That is awesome. And I know Don McGee, two of his companies had gone ahead and they sponsored, and he had CC'd me on there because I was the one that reached out to him. And Kathleen, like you said, within 5 to 10 minutes, she had an email right back to me, said, okay, I already reached out to Don, and he's all set. And that's what she meant, most meant, was that he had the logos, he had everything all set up. So that is awesome. That's great. But yes, reach out to me if you're interested in that opportunity. But one of the things that I like the most about, like, the Women in the Industry group is it's starting to build confidence in women that are in the industry. And that's part of what we're going to talk about today, is just building that confidence and feeling like you're not only a part of just your little town and your dealership, but, you know, an industry worldwide, which is really huge. And when you can start talking, when you're in a home, or even if you're somebody who is on the, that answers the phones or whatever you do within the organization, and you start talking to somebody, and all of a sudden, I do this quite often, where all of a sudden I just start talking about something going on in Arizona or something going on over in another part of the country. And I mean, it makes people think you know what you're talking about. So it builds a sense of confidence when you're able to be a part of the big picture. There was one time that I was talking to a gal, and she was telling me how she had got backstage to like over 100 concerts and never had a backstage pass ever. And I was asking her, I'm like, well, how in the world did you do that? You know? And she says, I walk in like I belong there. I walk in like I own the place. and nobody questions you. So, and Corey, I know that's something that you were kind of talking about at one point when you were running sales appointments. Did you ever run across that?
That's a really great segue, Jen.
I thought so. You weren't supposed to point out that it was a segue.
Yeah, it was smooth. I ruined it.
Okay.
Yeah, Jen and I were basically talking yesterday about how there's, you know, we work with a lot of different companies where the owner of the company goes out and actually helps sell equipment. You know, they sell as well. And I was saying it's kind of amazing how a lot of these owners, they don't have formal sales skills. You know, they don't do the whole presentation always or anything like that, but they usually have a you know, really good ratios, and they sell a lot. And I was asking Jen, you know, why she thought that was, and she said, well, it's confidence. When you walk into the home, you know, you have that confidence as the owner and the knowledge, because it's your equipment, hopefully, and it all just plays together, and customers can sort of read that, and it comes off in a really positive way and helps you sell. And I come to think of it, when I was out selling full-time, one of the biggest questions I got, like it was amazing how often I got it, was, are you the owner? And I remember, distinctly remember calling Jen after like three or four times of this happening and saying, everyone just keeps asking me if I'm the owner. And she said, yeah, that's good. It means you have confidence. So I thought that would be a really great thing to talk about today and sort of how that translates. I know Jen and Kelly have a lot of experience with that sort of thing, and you know, sales professionals who have confidence going into the home. So I know it certainly helps me. I think pretty much every single example of someone who asked me, "Are you the owner?" I think they went with me. I think the confidence translated to a sale.
It really is a compliment when somebody says that, because, I mean, I think in most cases it would be a compliment, and unless they're looking at you going, are you the owner? And they're saying, oh, because, holy crap, you know, that's, I mean, it could mean something different. But I think that most of the time if somebody asks that question, you know, it's sort of like, how long have you been doing this? You know, that's another question that's in that, that indicates that confidence, right? You know, you can tell in the tone how somebody, I remember you getting those questions too, Corey, when you had been here, like, you know, been in the industry less than 6 months, and people often thought that you had been in the industry much longer. And that's because, you know, you study and you learn and you know what you're talking about and you're speaking with confidence and, you know, and believing in what you do too is something. It's all part of the package. So I think that you're absolutely right. People can sense that, you know, people do not, it's, I don't know how you guys are, but you know, when you go and buy something and somebody says, well, I have to check with my manager and see if I can do a better price. I mean, tell me, I want to open this up for discussion a little bit. What do you guys, is there anybody on this call that likes it when somebody says that? What's your reaction when you're talking to somebody and you ask for something? You know, obviously I'm thinking of cars, but it also may be when you're shopping for anything, for your home or out and about, and you ask if you can get you know, something that's different than what is advertised or what is promoted. And somebody, the salesperson says, well, let me check with my manager. What's your reaction to that? How do you feel about that when that happens?
I know a friend of mine, we were just talking about this. She's having her backyard redone and a patio put in. And she said that the first guy that came out was, you know, everything was, well, I'll have to check to see if we can do that. And obviously he was newer. He wouldn't admit that he was, but it was, well, I'll check if I can do that. I'll check if I can do that. And she was telling me, she's like, that was the immediate, no, I'm not going to do it, because when he does go back to check to see if he can do it or not, he's probably not going to relay the message properly. But she said that she just didn't feel comfortable, and she understood everybody has to start somewhere, but it was still, she wasn't comfortable with going with that company.
Yeah, so why would, so, you know, in that, well, let me, like, everybody, anybody else, how do you guys, anybody else, how do you feel when that happens? What's your reaction? What do you do? Anybody else have any comments on that?
I actually do.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Okay. There are a lot of factors involved in that. Someone just mentioned a moment ago that everybody has to start somewhere. And you had mentioned the car dealerships who are notorious for letting people talk to my manager. And sometimes you expect that sort of thing. And sometimes you can appreciate it. But if there are programs and systems in place and something valid is out of the norm, then you don't want someone committing to something that we're really not going to be able to do. So there are going to be times where people do have to go back and talk to a manager. But it's really critical to have an organization around you that has systems and programs in place that you're not going to be overridden. And a lot of times with small businesses, you don't have that. And so if you don't have that in your organization, then that's probably a good starting point to go back and talk to everybody that is involved with that and get those programs in place where people can speak with confidence and they know they're going to have the support for the decisions they make and they know what they're allowed to do.
I think that's a really good point, and I think it goes to why people might be more apt to buy from an owner. You know, that why they might feel more confident and or comfortable in buying from an owner, because the owner is not going to override the owner, right? And I mean, how many of us have bought something from a salesperson who promised us something only to have a manager or an owner say later, he's just a salesperson, he does not have the authority to promise those things, you know, that, you know, or he shouldn't have done that, you know? And how many companies are there that, you know, won't support the salesperson in those things, even when it was a mistake? You know, it can be costly. It's a cost of training. When you have a new salesperson that priced something, you know, that should have been priced much higher, you know, it's you have to make a decision. Do you honor that, or do you, you know, at the loss, or, you know, do you use that as a cost of training that new person, you know? So I think that you're exactly right, Jerry, to have that structure in place and have that policy in place. And, you know, do you as a sales professional have the authority, you know, to Jen's point, to make, if you do have the knowledge, you know, to make those decisions, to make those managerial or those business decisions? I hope that you do. You know, I remember years and years ago, I was the assistant manager for the Shoe Carnival. I think in Bloomington, Indiana, I worked at the Shoe Carnival. And my title was assistant manager, which means that I made about 15 cents more an hour than anybody else. And it means I could lock up, you know, open and lock up at night. But I had no authority whatsoever to give discounts on shoes or to even take returns, to accept returns or any of that stuff. I had no authority. So it was title only. Meant nothing. I had no ability to do anything other than to relieve the pressure off the actual manager, who wasn't there nearly as much, you know, who wasn't locking up or opening up the store. And that always, you know, it was like, why have the title in the first place? You know, why it's not a management title. And so, you know, anytime I've had a position, whether it was a territory manager position, if I had the, even if it was, you know, anything that indicated management, I don't want the title. I don't care about the title. What I want is the ability to make those decisions in real time that I know are going to be in the best interest of the company and the customer simultaneously. And I think it's important that if you do not have that in your organization, then you should go to your leadership and ask them what you need to do to get it, because it really does make a difference in your ability to close sales. It's why an owner can do it. An owner, somebody asks the owner a question, they can say yes or no definitively. They have the confidence to be able to do that. You, in order for you to have that same confidence, should have the same ability to make some of those decisions, you know, assuming you're going to make them in the best interest of the company and the customer. Do you guys agree with that?
Well, yes, and you know, to that point, Kelly, when you mentioned make the choice in the best interest of the company, you know, we've had a discussion where sales professionals will sometimes they'll give away everything, including the kitchen sink, and
yeah.
Because it's not their money, and that's something that you have to remember is, you know, if you were the owner, would you be willing to take a loss on the sale? Because sometimes that's what it leads into, is a loss on the sale. But so who is there? Who else? I mean, Stacy, you have a very strong confidence. Jamie, you have a very strong confidence, but you're part owner too. who else? I mean, all of you, how do you build that confidence? How do you get that confidence?
So Stacy here, I think a lot of it's learning and knowledge and knowing what you're doing. A lot of it takes that extra effort of, you know, showing up on installs and learning from that, from the installers, and some of it's, you know, learning. We had a problem a while back that the service manager was complaining because we were having a lot of times where the salesperson sent a service tech out there to determine whether or not we could do the install. And apparently he's like, these guys aren't learning from it because they're not showing up. And I'm like, hold on, what do you mean they're not showing up? The rep is supposed to be there so he can learn. So we finally set it up. I said, but here's the issue. You got to make sure your guys tell the rep when they're going to be there and not change it on them five times. Because the last one I had, the guy showed up 2 hours, the tech showed up 2 hours earlier, and I was on another appointment. So it basically boiled down to training for the reps to develop that. But then it also boils down to, so if the owner says, we can do this install on a difficult install, those service techs are going to do it. If I say we can do it, they may not always agree with me
right.
and not do it if they don't want to do a difficult install. And that's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is, and yeah. Which is where the communication comes and, you know, the systems that Jerry was referring to make sure that you understand what those parameters are, because otherwise you are going to be put in a situation where somebody is overriding or so if you don't have those systems in place, I think one of the key takeaways from this call so far is to take a look at that and understand what the parameters are and understand what you need to do to have those systems in place. You know, and then that may be going to your management and saying, hey, here's the situation. What am, you know, to be very blunt, what am I allowed to do or not do? How do I get to a point where I have this ability to make these decisions? In the last couple minutes here, let me ask a different question that's slightly different but related to the same topic. What do you do in a situation where you have an owner that is selling it for, you know, going in and offering your customers less money, you know, selling it for less because they have the ability to discount it where you don't? Do you guys, have you ever run into that situation? How do you handle that situation? I know there's a lot of small companies out there that happens with, you know, where you have a manager and or an owner that will sell it for less than what you are allowed to sell it for on the price list.
So this is Jamie, and I'm kind of a, I just started really stepping into the sales. I've been in the office more, but it's been so busy. Chris can't handle it all by himself. And so being a husband and wife team, I am still leaning on him a little bit to help me through the process. But any of our guys are, we empower them to sell. If they go out on a repair call and it just needs to be a total replacement, we do that. What we find is we empower them for the prices. We've trained them. They have lists, like all those things. Sometimes they'll overdo the install, the price of the install. And so that's when we coach them and say, we're going to drop the price down, but we have them talk to the customer and let them know they do it. We do not come behind them and do it ahead of them or whatever. So we always empower our guys to handle it that way.
It's the exact right way to do it, Jamie. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Right. So for the last couple of minutes, one of the things that I had looked up was how to increase your self-confidence at work. And there's 10 items. And this is actually, this was a really good article that I had read. I agree with all of these, but one is attend professional development training. I mean, how often do we push to attend webinars through WQA, get certified through the WQA? Your manufacturers, they always, I keep getting a ton of emails. Manufacturers are doing online training now because it's just so much easier. So that is like definitely a good thing to do. Learn new skills. Don't be afraid to try new things. Dress for success. We talk about this quite often. I mean, when you dress nice, you have a little bit more confidence. Leave your comfort zone. Don't be afraid to go in and just kind of have that, you know, that air about you, not confidence, not arrogance, but confidence. And emulate confident peers. And this is something that I used to, believe it or not, I used to be really quiet and shy. And so what I started doing was watching people that it's like, I like what she's doing. I want to do that. And so I just started following suit for what the other women that I wanted to be like. Set goals for yourself. I think goals are amazing. Focus on your strengths. That is something that a lot of people don't do. They have strengths. They just don't focus enough on it. And when you do make mistakes, just learn from them. We all make mistakes. But, you know, don't keep making the same mistakes over and over again. Learn from them. Eliminate negative language. I think that when we start getting down in the dumps, a lot of negative language comes out. And then that also kind of spews on to our customers. And we need to really make sure that we're keeping things as positive as possible in the home. And when we're talking to our customers, our builders, our relationships that we've built with, you know, realtors and so on. And then ask a lot of questions. And we know we talk about asking questions in the home, but ask a lot of questions and you know, this also leads to going on the installs. I think that is the best place that you can learn is by the people who are installing your equipment, who are servicing your equipment. That is the number one place that you're going to get the best answers. And, you know, hopefully in most cases, they do want you to ask questions so that it's less work on them when you go back, you know, when you're out working in the field and you're making sure to put everything on the install sheet. So does anybody have anything to add? Any questions? Awesome. I think we're at our 9 o'clock time slot Eastern. Thank you, everybody. Kelly, did you want to close?
I just wanted to say thanks, everybody. Really appreciate it. I love the discussion. You know, I love the participation in the discussion. It's a great topic. So thanks, everybody. Be safe. We will talk to you next week, if not before.
Take care, everyone.